Hey guys, this is Danny McDermott from The Danny McDermott Show. If you want to see our show live, it's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Trust me, you want to see it then. You'll see all the screw-ups. It's great. Our show is an adult show, I must admit, but that's only because we're childish. Most of the guests that we have on the show are my friends, so you can just watch us hang out as buddies. It's fun. Just chill, relax, enjoy.
Rick Overton and Dan Behar, please welcome Danny McDermott and Kevin G. Fitzgerald.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Susanna.
Hey, Danny.
What happened to Kevin?
We're having some Facebook and connectivity issues.
Are we really? Oh, that's just wonderful.
Yeah. So it's not going to Facebook right now.
It's going to one of the Facebooks, right?
Your personal page, not the show page. So
okay, I will go out of the studio and I will reconnect that now. And why don't you talk to Kevin for a minute?
Okay.
Sorry, guys. Hold on a second.
Hey, Kev. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm good. We're just trying to get this taken care of.
It's a very 2020 night.
It is. Let me bring Anthony on for a little chat, too. Hey, Anthony. How are you?
Looks like he's muted. He's definitely muted.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays. How
Hi.
Are you?
Good.
Welcome. That's a very Christmas outfit.
Oh, this is just my, you know, everyday clothing, you know.
Nothing wrong with that either.
No, you know, 2020, I've tried to celebrate Christmas every day. Because why not?
You know,
otherwise I would cry.
That's the best approach to 2020 I've heard so far. So I'll take it.
Looks like you're in New Orleans again.
I am. The Big Easy.
Love it. I got to visit.
Great place. Great place. Good music culture. Good food culture. They encourage drinking outdoors. It's really, there's got a lot there to like.
Number one city with liver transplants, I understand.
Speaking of which, let's all have a drink.
Welcome back, Danny. Right on time.
Thank you. I'm not sure what's happening with the Lynx, but you know, this is typical of what's happening. We're gonna go through this stuff. All right, so Anthony, we're gonna bring you back in a second. I want to talk about holiday travel, Kevin.
All right.
Have you heard about the guy that went out on the wing of a plane?
I have.
Have you seen it?
I have.
I think we're going to show it, but this guy goes out on the wing. Now, I think he came from the tarmac or something, but let me see if I can find it. But he went out on the wing of the plane, and they had to let me see if I can find it here. This guy was chased down by security. He started taking off his clothes and stuff on the wing. Did you hear anything about the story at all?
I did. I did, and I for one celebrate. You know, he's got to let off a little steam. Some people do it different than others.
Well, I don't know, man. Is the thing plugged up there? It is. Yeah. So this guy, I'm going to try to show this here. I'm going to try to share this screen. Hold on. This guy was nuts. Apparently, I don't know if he's on drugs or what, but look at this guy.
Come with the Spectrum Mobile.
Oh my God, we got a commercial. This show is going awesome.
We're at the mercy of 2020, Danny. We'll take it personal.
Dude, seriously, look at this guy. So he's out on the wing. I mean, what's he doing?
I've seen that move in the nightclubs before.
Where did he come from? What did he look at? He's pulling up his.
Okay.
Did William Shatner send this guy or what?
How high off the ground is a wing?
I don't know. How did he get up there? Look, he's humping it. He's like, I'm going to hump my way home.
I guess that saying everything is a sex toy if you're brave enough is apparently true. In a totally different way, but it's true.
Look at, they're coming after him. Oh, man. We didn't have the whole video, but the security came out. They came after the guy. It's like, look, if you can't afford a plane ticket, that's not the way to go.
I don't think you could do that from the tarmac. I think he had to do it from the plane.
He had to be on
the
plane, right? How did he?
Yeah, I think he had to.
How did he get on there? Seriously, even if he was in the plane, how did he get on the wing? I mean, really?
Well, and
that's some magic. That's some magic right there.
I think he thought it through, though, because, like, I think if he would have taken his shoes off on the plane and gotten up, he would have attracted attention. So he disrobed at the right time. and the humping, too. If he would have done the humping on the plane, he never would have made it out to the wing.
That's true. That's true. So you think he planned the humping and and everything when he got it? What attracted him to the wing so much, the humping? That's what I want to know.
A lot of people are isolated, Danny.
He's like, I don't want to have sex with a bent wing, but with a regular straight wing. But a bent wing turns me on, you know, the way. I don't know.
How do you obtain consent from a plane, Danny?
I don't know. There might be a court case. The plane may have some problems.
You know, he's probably gonna say it could have taken off at any time.
I just feel bad for the wing. I really do. I feel bad for the guys cleaning the wing after he got off on the wing.
I got to say, I'd rather a guy act up on the wing than in the seat the flight before I got to sit there. So for that, I applaud him as well.
Oh, my God. So would you see if he were any of my buddies, would just nickname him the wing humper.
The 8 foot high club. He's flying solo.
Oh my God. Anyway, listen, we got a big show tonight. We got some amazing guests. We have some technical issues, but we have amazing guests tonight. I don't want to wait too long to get into this because I really want time with both these guests.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's bring on our first guest. This guy's a very good friend of mine. He's one of my best friends in the world, to be honest with you. He got his start with South Park creators Trey Parker and Matt Stone in the cult classic films Cannibal the Musical, Orgasmo, and Basketball. Please welcome Dean Bahar. Let's hear it.
Hello.
What's up, buddy?
Hi, how's it going? Woo! Hey, Kevin.
Good.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Do you like my new forest? I just got it.
It's amazing, dude. It's amazing.
Yeah. I planted all of them just in time for the holidays. These are Christmas trees. Not your typical Christmas tree, but just as festive.
Nice.
I would agree with you. It's a beautiful forest, and I love how you're like, are you like
I'm sporting a hat.
Are you lucid dreaming right now? Because you're kind of fading in. Are you astral projecting into this place?
It's a magical time. It's a magical year.
So, dude, we met at a barbecue.
Yeah.
At a barbecue at Loa Alabama.
We're eating hot dogs and hamburgers and became buddies.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. It was crazy. It was cool. And you were involved in the reading of my movie, and I still want you in that part.
I would love to.
Yeah, and we got a picture. Let's do that. And then can we show the pictures of the reading? I want to show these pictures. Okay, this was 18 actors. There you go. Now, we got to lean over. We can barely be seen, Dan. there you go. Perfect. So we got, that's me on the left. Next, with his back to us, is Casper Van Dien. Then we got Judd Nelson, Jennifer Wenger, and Christopher Titus. And if you go back to the bigger picture, that's Dean's back with a hat and the hoodie. That's Dean right there. And it was an epic. We can take the picture off now. But we had that was an amazing reading. We had
that was one of my best behind the back moments.
I wish I had a picture with you from the front, but I didn't have it. So, but
I was so ugly that night. You know, I just thankfully you didn't. I was hideous.
Let me tell you something, dude. You blew everyone away. I mean,
I did have explosives. I know it's not a safe thing to do, but it's sometimes the right thing to do.
You crushed the reading, though.
I think everybody was great. You have a really funny script, so it was easy to have fun with it.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody did a good job. You came in so prepared that literally everybody's like, "Who's that guy? That guy's good," you know, and like everybody was blown away. I was blown away. I mean,
thanks.
The character beyond like what anybody expected, you know, because in a reading, a lot of people, you know, I'm not going to say who, some people mailed it in a little bit. Kevin, you really blew my mind. You were really phenomenal in that reading. And
thank you. I hope we get to make it because that'd be a fun character to play.
It will be. How did you start in the business?
Actually with Trey Parker and Matt Stone. I met them in college and did some movies with them. I did Orgasmo. I did Cannibal the Musical, which was Trey's senior thesis film in college.
Really?
And that got picked up for distribution and actually got seen after a long time of trying to get it noticed and getting it entered in festivals. They finally hooked up with Lloyd Kaufman and Troma picked it up for distribution. And then I was lucky. I got to do basketball. I got brought in for some table reads for that and kind of auditioned like 8 times. They kept bringing me in to read more lines and more lines. And it was a long process and I finally got it. And and then from there, I just kept auditioning for stuff. It was,
dude, you were so funny in that too, by the way.
Yes, you were.
Oh, well, thanks, man. Thank you.
What was your character's name again?
In which one?
In basketball.
In basketball, Kenny Scolari. He's Squeak.
Squeak Scolari.
Yeah, you know, it's really crazy. That was the first big studio movie I did. And I just did Nightmare Alley, which is an amazing big studio film by Disney. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, which is leading into it, is that Willem Dafoe is in Nightmare Alley. And he... Right. He's one of my all-time favorite actors. He's just an incredible actor. But I was so thankful to find out that he's also a really nice person. And, you know, they always tell you to avoid your heroes and to avoid your legendary icons and people because you might be disappointed by who they are or how they come across. And it was nothing but amazing getting to talk to him. He was like the nicest, most genuine, down-to-earth guy. And the thing that was cool is that when I introduced myself and said hello to him, I mentioned basketball, and he immediately was like, oh my God. He's like, that's how I started. He's like, not because of baseball, but because of David Zucker and Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams. He actually worked with those guys when he was 15 years old. He was in this experimental theater group called the Kentucky Fried Theater Company, which is really cool because that actually led into the movie. Those guys did an improv film, which is an amazing cult hit called the Kentucky Fried Theater Company. Yeah, I do too. And so I mentioned that to Willem Dafoe, and he's like, no, this is way before that. Before they did any movies or anything, they had an experimental theater group. And Willem Dafoe was part of that. He acted with Jim Abrams and David Zucker and did like crazy theater stuff with them. So that was just like a weird, really cool coincidence. And getting to talk to him about that was
he in the magical movie, Kentucky Fried Movie?
That's no, he didn't play any part in that, no.
Kentucky Fried Movie and The Groove Tube are the two best movies of the 70s.
Oh, yeah, and The Groove Tube. All that stuff. Yeah, yes. I love improv. Yeah.
So you haven't just worked with them. You've done a lot of films, and a lot of projects since then.
Yeah, I've done a lot of independent movies too. I don't know, if you go to IMDb, which is like the International Movie Database, and you look me up, that gives you all the credits of all the actors and actually any crew member. If you look up anybody, you want to, if there's a certain cameraman you like or a sound designer you like, you can look these people up and list all the movies that they've done. And I've actually done 51 movies. I've done 51 roles that I've actually been paid for, which is fun. It's kind of amazing to me because I think about it, I'm like, I should have more money right now. I've had some really great opportunities, and I've got some really cool new movies coming up. I've got another really amazing independent film I'm doing called Loaded Deck, which I'm filming this summer. That's kind of a thriller mixed with comedy. Quentin Aaron, who is an amazing actor, he was on The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock. That's where he made his debut. He's going to be starring in this with me, and I'm really excited about that movie. That's going to be a very different character for me. I'm playing kind of a shady hitman, but a tech guy, like a tech nerd, but that'll be cool. And then of course, Nightmare Alley, which is going to be amazing. That's a remake.
I remember when you got that and how excited you were. And I was just so happy for you. Guillermo del Toro. What is he like?
He's one of my all-time favorite directors. He's like, I think of him kind of like Hitchcock. He's kind of like Alfred Hitchcock in that he's very meticulous about what he wants to see on the screen. And he looks at every frame like a painting. And he's very precise about splashes of color and things as if he's looking at a painting. You know, it's a moving painting. And he's a real artist. He's a true artist. So I feel blessed that I had a chance to hang out with him. But he's another person that's genuinely kind, totally down to earth. I was so scared to meet him and so thankful that he was a nice person and, very open to meet doing improv, which is very cool. And my character is very small in the movie. It's a remake of a classic film that was put out in 1947. It starred Tyrone Power, and it's an old crime film noir movie that, William Lindsay Gresham wrote. It's a famous novel that it's based on, and Guillermo's remake is going to be set in the 30s. So he switched the time period a bit, and his film is starring Bradley Cooper and Toni Collette and Cate Blanchett and Willem Dafoe, just some amazing people. But my character is not in the original movie. It's sort of an additional thing that he was kind of adding basically for, if you look at it like a painting, just an extra splash of color. And so I really didn't know where I was going to end up in the movie. And I was there for 2 months. I was in Toronto. We filmed the whole thing for 2 months, and I was on hold for so much of it because really it was basically like sitting. I try to make this metaphor comparison. It was kind of like I was a bit of paint that he had ordered, and I was sitting in his studio just waiting for him to dip his brush in and splash me across the screen somewhere. I didn't know where it was going to be or how it was going to happen, but I just waited. And then finally he put me in, and it was, it's this thing where I'll come back and I'll look at it and go, I think it's going to be an Academy Award winning movie. I think it's going to be nominated. Absolutely. It's beautiful. I mean, all of his movies are beautiful, but.
Well, the original movie was awesome. You and I went to see it in the theater.
Yeah, it's an incredible movie, but this the cinematography in this, he's got this amazing camera that's called the Scorpion. Like it's much smoother and better than a Steadicam, than a person carrying it actually, because, well, I mean, a person can go into all sorts of cool spots and things, but the Scorpion can also, in a very steady way, telescope out like 20 freaking yards and move up and down and move like a snake and move through a room. It was the most crazy sci-fi movie making thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like, they have the most insane tracking shots in this movie. It's beautiful. And it's just so perfectly lit and composed. It looks like every frame is like a painting. It's just, I'm just thankful to be a little piece of that. Just a little splash in there.
Yeah. Well, he's just coming off the Academy Award for Shape of Water.
Yeah, he won the Oscar for Best Picture for Shape of Water, which is another beautiful film. So it's, yeah, I think he really kind of, not that all of his movies weren't always beautiful, but I think Shape of Water in particular really kind of set a production value standard maybe for him that I think now people are going to be probably expecting. Wow, like amazing imagery. Like it's always been amazing, but just like really beautifully crafted.
Speaking of Shape of Water, Doug Jones.
Yeah.
I know Doug Jones. I've had him on my previous podcast when I had podcasts. You got to work with him.
I did on a small project, on a little independent film years ago. Yeah, he was a narrator on a film that I had a small part in. It was called Man in the Silo. Yeah, so basically, I kind of worked with him technically, but he didn't work on Nightmare Alley, unfortunately. His schedule is such that he's like major star on that new Star Trek show. So,
yeah,
I mean, I have not had an opportunity to see it yet because I think it's only on CBS Access right now, but it's a huge hit right now. So he's more than busy.
Well, the guy's a legend as far as
creature. Yeah, he's kind of like a Lon Chaney. He really is. He's gone through so many characters and so many roles.
He was the fish in Hellboy. He was the alien in that series, Falling Skies or something. I forget what the name of it was. He was Pan in Labyrinth. He was like all these different. So, but you recently got to hang out with him, right?
Yeah, because he's filming Star Trek out in Toronto. So I had lunch with him a couple times and I reached out to him originally to tell him that I had a part in the movie because I wanted some advice because I wear prosthetic makeup in this movie and really bizarre makeup. And so I wanted to hear from somebody else who's worn a lot of prosthetic makeup, what's that like and, you know, what to expect. And obviously because he's worked with Guillermo and he was so nice and really cool and open to just giving me tons of advice and telling me stories and just, he's a really cool guy. So I went out to lunch with him a couple times and very thankful I formed a friendship with him and hopefully work with him again sometime. I actually, I worked on a screenplay of my own while I was there and had a lot of downtime. Yep. So I was able to focus on my own work and I wrote a screenplay and hopefully you'll
like it. Tell us about that?
It's a murder mystery, but I don't want to give you any info about it. I'm going to wait till it's ready. I just finished the first draft and I just got some notes from my wife who is brilliant. I think she's pretty smart.
Your wife. I feel like she's my wife now too, because she's a writer for my show.
Yes, she is. Very talented in her own right.
Yeah, she's very talented.
Yes, she is.
So, very talented. I'm
not sure. I'll rewrite some bit. Do some stuff based on her notes and I'm going to make a novel version. But the thing is, it's really cool. Now with people writing scripts, you can self publish. You can publish a book now, which is a really smart idea if you're going to write a screenplay that is conducive to a novel as well, because first of all, you're going to protect your story in another venue. You're going to have another way to protect the story that's even more detailed and harder, probably, I would assume, to steal. And then on top of that, if you actually get a deal with your movie, if somebody does want to make a film, they're going to get the book rights too. You're going to get paid twice. You're going to get a book deal and the movie script deal. And hopefully if it's a good movie, people will want to buy copies of your book, but it's so easy now. You know, you used to have to be dependent upon a publishing house to do all that for you.
Right.
Which is still obviously the best way to get major distribution, major dollars, but really the point is just to get your stuff seen by people. And if you can self-publish and still get eyes on your product, you can still sell a book. I mean, you can still sell. You can do the same thing anybody else that sold a book can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's one thing I've known about you since I met you is you work harder than almost anybody I've ever met in my life. So I know.
My wife would argue with that.
But I know you. I'm talking about compared to most actors. Okay. Most actors, let's be honest, most actors are pretty damn lazy. You know what I mean?
Well,
I'm not going to name names, Kevin, but
well, you know, the thing is, and I've been guilty of this a lot, is a lot of people wait. You know, you wait around thinking that other people know what kind of parts you can play. You think that they're going to figure it out and they're just going to invite you to audition for something, or they're going to have some idea of what they think you can do. But that's a major flaw. You should never do that. If you know that you can do something,
do it.
Be proactive and do it. And that's something that I've made a major mistake. I love writing. I love writing almost as much as I love acting, but I kind of put it on the back burner for a long time and sat around auditioning for other things and trying to get involved in other people's projects, when what I should have been doing on top of that is making my own projects and fortifying my own body of work by owning my own product and presenting myself in characters and roles that maybe some other people didn't think about. Like this movie I'm doing that I want to do, that I'm writing right now. My working title right now is called The Semblance Factor. And it's kind of like my sling blade in a way. I compare it to that because Billy Bob Thornton worked for years and years and didn't get noticed till probably, I think he was in his 40s when he did Sling Blade. And it finally like kicked him into overdrive. And I'm hoping that, you know, if I can make something that maybe is sort of even just slightly as cool as that, then I'm lucky. Then I can maybe just keep presenting work and work more for myself and not just.
Well, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. You and I are going to get our stuff made. It's going to happen. We're going to be working together. I know we are. It's going to be great. We definitely are. We do have a little segment we want to do with you.
Okay.
That we have, for those of you who follow the show, we do funny little segments just to show we're professional. And so we're going to do this one since it's the holidays. Susanna, you want to bring it up here? So what we have a segment that we do all the time, failed song titles. And we figured, hey, what better, you know, because the original song titles weren't always the song titles you hear today. And so we have some Christmas song titles that people didn't realize. They tried to come up with titles and they were bad before the real title came out. So let's go through these here. Let's see what we got. For example, Little Drummer Boy was originally called Someone Take That Kid's Drum Away, The Baby's Finally Sleeping. It's amazing to me that people think that the song title was always right. Anyway, let's see the next one. All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth was originally Sean Penn Is a Terrible Husband.
I think that depends on your stance on the paparazzi.
All right, why don't you read the next one? Dan, you read the next one.
Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer was originally titled There's Now an Open Bed at Bickford Senior Manor. That's pretty rough.
I don't know, man. It's just, you know, I mean, I'm so glad that they fixed the titles before this happened.
Yeah, it could have been bad. Could have been a lot of accidents.
Right. Next
That's
one.
Why they change it so people don't get hurt.
Okay, O Holy Night was originally called That Saturday That Tupac Got
How
Shot.
How ironic. I just mentioned. So people don't get hurt.
Oh my God. Was it South Park or Family Guy where the Tupac hologram had to go kill the Michael Jackson hologram? I don't know. I watch shit all the time. That's weird. All right, Dean, your turn.
Do They Know It's Christmas? Was originally Keep Them the Hell Out of This Country.
Kevin, did you write all these or what's happening right now?
That's so far of all of the ones you've done. That last one was the first one that I wrote.
All right, next one.
All I Want for Christmas Is You was originally Kevin. What?
All I Want for Christmas Is Going to Take a Lot of Songs.
Okay. Kevin, you're fired. Anthony's still vying for your job, buddy. Let me tell you. And he's coming on at the end.
He's a talented man. I'll have to do what I can to thwart his attempts.
Next one. What are we on? Go ahead, Dean. You're the guest.
I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus was originally, face it, Mommy's a Hoe. Not Christmassy at all. Not good for the kids.
There's a whole day to get it out of the system.
It's just, this is like really, okay. This is not getting me in the holiday spirit at all. All these things are pretty horrible, actually.
I need eggnog.
Were you drinking spiked eggnog when you wrote these, Kevin?
I was. I spiked it myself.
Is that it? Is that it? Or do we have any more? Is that it? Susanna, come on, tell us what's going on. I want you guys to meet Susanna, by the way. She is our engineer extraordinaire. She's got the best lighting, best sound, best voice.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey. Hello. Right?
Everything is good.
Everything is good?
Okay. That is the last one.
That is the last one. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm terrible at counting when I'm not thinking.
I'm not sure what that means, Danny.
I don't either. See, I'm not thinking. That's why it works.
27, 28,
29. Dean, where can people find you?
What?
Where can people find you? Where can your fans?
In this magical forest. You can find me on Twitter at Dean Bahar. I do the tweet thing.
And, okay.
I'm a Facebook nerd too. I do Facebook a lot, so you can find me on that. But I need to start doing Instagram, I guess.
I know. You and me both. We got to do TikTok too. We got to start twerking.
I'm just not very tech-savvy. Yeah.
Well, Dean, you are by far one of the most talented human beings I've ever met in my life. And I'm grateful you're my friend. I'm grateful you're doing my show. And I definitely want to have you back. And yeah, I can't wait to see you, brother.
You too, and, man. Thank you. You're one of my buddies too. And Kevin, I hope we're friends too soon. I just met you, so.
You're in.
I did it.
Yes. That's the whole goal for most guests is to meet Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, we just all want to be friends, right?
Truthfully, absolutely. After Wu-Tang, I'm like the ninth or tenth most impressive man on Staten Island.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thank you so much, Dean.
Thank you.
I would have, I know, you know, I would love to have you on the whole show, but unfortunately the connection issues right now, it's just 2020. It's a 2020 thing. It's a disaster. It's a disaster, but I love you, man.
Thank you.
I want you to come back soon, please.
Okay. Yeah. I'd love to. That'd be fun.
Awesome. All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's great. He was awesome.
Oh, Dean's amazing. I love Dean. He's one of my favorite human beings.
Very talented.
Let me tell you something. He's not only talented, but he's also a genuine human being. He genuinely cares about everybody. And, you know, he's the type of guy, when I'm an asshole, he'll put me in my place. You know?
So he's busy.
Yes, he is. Okay. Without further ado, I want to bring on a legend, a man who I've looked up to since I started comedy. A man who's was best friends with Robin Williams. He's done all this work. He's got more IMDb credits than IMDb. He is an Emmy Award-winning veteran stand-up comedian and an actor for 4 decades. Please welcome Rick Overton, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing, buddy? Uh-oh. I can't hear you, Rick. Is he muted? He's muted. Let me fix that, Rick. Hold on. Hold on. I got you. I'm unmuting. Okay, there we go. How you doing, Rick? You muted him again.
I have. There we go. I just touched it. I have it now.
You know what it was?
Don't touch anything. You know, the future so far is fantastic. That's all I can say. Everything's gotten easier.
You think so?
No, I don't think so.
You know what it was? It was you, me, and Susanna trying to unmute you all at once. So we kept muting and unmuting. They should never give me access to the studio.
He can mute himself. It was his fault. I'm just kidding.
All right, get out because he there you go. We don't have the bandwidth to have more than just you and me here.
I'm sorry about that.
No, come on. I'm just blessed that you're on my show.
I'm glad to be here. And as you can tell, I'm luxuriating here with my huge estate behind me and crackling fireplace. And I can't make it work with the iPhone for some reason. No wonder the app is free.
Right. So, yeah. God, you're like a comedian that all of us look up to. You've been in the business. How long have you been in the business?
What is today?
Thursday, Wednesday.
A little over. It's about 45 years.
45 years, man. And now, why don't you? Because I know a lot of. Comics are watching right now. Why don't you tell us how you got into the business, how you got started, and who you worked with?
Well, I got started working with a buddy of mine in high school, Anthony Pastor, or Ton, T-O-N-N. And we were Overton and Pastor, and we would do assemblies with sketches, with blackouts and laughs, and it was starting to be like a thing. It became like a real, once you get that first, you know, I did school plays and I was hamming it up for You Can't Take It With You and stuff like that, and getting laughs, and I started to get bit. Bug was getting me. And then, but yeah, my dad loved Jonathan Winters because he was a jazz musician. He loved that free play improv style. It didn't matter whether you were speaking it or playing it or singing it or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And so, he loved freeform artists in the comedy world too. My dad was kind of a frustrated comic, and he would play me Jonathan Winters records and things like that. And he would also play me Bob and Ray and Bob Newhart and
Bob Newhart. Oh my God. His stand-up was amazing.
I'm sorry?
I said Bob Newhart's stand-up was amazing. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, great, great mind. Button-down mind. And then my buddy Ton got work down in Florida where he lives now with a wonderful family. And I was looking for another partner. And so my buddy Bill Spitz hooked me up with this guy named Roger Sullivan. And he was really funny and wild and weird and physical. And we were Overton and Sullivan for 5 years. And everything was great when you're in the arts and you're just doing art. And it's art for art's sake. But the second they start to pay you with a paycheck and you're in a team, the thing about being in a team is that's the same hour, whether it's one of you or two of you. You don't pay because it's an hour. You got to figure out half of that pay the entire time.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it becomes about whose punchline is more important than whose setup and premise and blah, 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 blah. You know, teams, a lot of teams have come apart once it was about the pay.
Oh, really? Wow.
And so I failed for a while, but I was looking for improv the whole time. I was studying with Martin Harvey Friedberg. I was, you know, I was in that play, J.J. Barrie's Zen Boogie, which came out of an improv thing. The cast created the show. So I was always around a world where improv played a big role in something. And a lot of my IMDb has improv all through it.
I love improv. I mean,
it got me. I was funny in the audition. It got me work. They like you more. There's no downside to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I did a series that I wrote and directed called Who Killed the Bible Salesman? And it was all improvised. And after editing it and looking at it and then putting it next to a scripted show, it just seemed much more natural and much funnier. It just, you can't beat it.
There have been great works of art and ongoing TV series that have that kind of playful spirit to it, whether it was, you know, Curb or The Office.
Yep.
Or a lot of things had that go off book feel.
Yeah.
Even Robin Williams was doing that on Mork and Mindy, and they would leave it in, and you could tell right where it is, too.
There's yeah, yeah, no yeah. Way
could have just sat and typed that thing out.
So what were you doing when Robin was doing that? Were you guys were friends at that point, right?
I was doing stand-up, you know, and I would sometimes join the Comedy Store Players and do improv and sketches there back then, in the earlier days. So we'd run into each other sometimes at the Comedy Store Players, you know, or when he was coming out from after recording Mork and Mindy, would just be down the street at Paramount from the Improv on Melrose.
Yeah.
And come by after the show and we'd play. Yeah, so we started playing a lot together, doing improv after I would do a set. I could not go on after he did a set and say, and here's my buddy Rick Overton to come and play with me. That never worked. Because who the hell's this guy? It's like, you know, a giant band bringing on some local guy after them.
Right, right. One of my friends who directed me in my one-man show, he knew Robin. I don't know if you met him, but his name was Joe Paradise. And he was on a double date. He was on a double date with Robin one night. And they went to the comedy club. And Robin went up and he crushed it. And then he went backstage and he didn't come back for a while. And the girls were like, where is he? And Joe went backstage and Robin was crying. And he said, why are you crying? And he goes, I suck. Didn't I suck? Did I suck? And Joe's like, no, you were phenomenal. I mean, was that something that happened often to him, or I'm just curious.
You know, he's human. It's just, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think the word off is what that phenomenon is. Moments of darkness and doubt, everyone gets that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just someone's not always there to get that story to tell everyone later.
Right, but right.
that you've had it, I've had it, everybody has one of those.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, look far enough back, you'll find that night.
People don't realize how difficult comedy is, really. I mean, it, your mood affects everything, you know?
Yeah, I think it can. Some actors know how to work completely around that.
Yeah.
And when it's showtime, here we go. Yeah. It's like that. And other people, they got to bring what is to the scene. You know, different styles, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've but always seen.
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I want to hear what you're saying.
I think people who do more character work with that kind of character detail, they are, I think, truer to the needs of the moment in some ways than someone who's just their own star presence is the whole point.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've always blown me away by your performances. I've seen you recently. I saw you in Grimm in the past few years. Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, that was a lot of fun. It was wonderful to see Jim and Lynn up there, producers and writers, and the Kaufs and creators. And they're old friends of mine from ages ago. And they brought me in to play Uncle Walter, and I played a German. So my first chance to play a German, which was great because, you know, you don't get the opportunity all the time to work your dialect enough. So if you, and you want the footage. Yeah, you want the footage on your ear. So I got to do it. And I went up, and I know he's supposed to turn into a wolf guy when someone threatens him. And I was thinking, oh, dude, I am going to be hours in that chair. Those things take forever. I remember back in the old days when they used to do prosthetics and everything like that. And they're getting past lunch. We're almost into penalty now. We're shooting past when you're supposed to break for lunch. And they went, okay, everybody, let's take a quicker lunch. And so, but, and I went, and remember up next, I it says in the scene breakdown here that I'm going to be the monster next. So should I be in May? Oh, no, no, no. We do it with an electric scan thing. In fact, let's get him in now before lunch. So I stand there, green thing like this, and there's a row of cameras with different functions. And I go, and they go, normal face, happy face, monster face, profile, monster face, normal face. And in just a few seconds, this thing map gridded my face. And when... And they said, you want locator dots after lunch? And they went, oh, no, the new software, you don't need locators anymore. It just knows your face. It's this facial recognition stuff that's at the airports all over the world. It has a showbiz application, too. And it's part of how they make now deep fake uses that all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can we show the picture? I want to show the picture of him and Grimm. Susanna, you got that? Yeah, we do. I sent it to you. You don't have it? okay, well, we have a picture of it somewhere, but I'm going to send it to her again. But go ahead. Keep talking. So they didn't even have to do any makeup at all for that.
You didn't have to put locator dots on me. I would just be in the scene. And I go, yeah, Grimm. I haven't converted yet. And I go, then she goes, ew, two Grimms. Like that. And that sound is supposed to trigger it. And
yeah.
Just me in that scene going, like that with my face. I look crazy.
I watched that whole series.
It kind of looks cool when you put the monster over it.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And there it is, right there.
There it is. See? Not second in the chair. A second in the chair was for my normal uncle makeup. There was none of this, though.
It's incredible.
And it just
it's
took a couple of days.
Right?
Yeah.
Not only that, but you could move around.
Would have been half a year of work ages ago, you know, to to layer the Lon Chaney lines of Wolfman fur in, stop the shot, start the shot again, you know.
And your accent was impeccable. It was awesome. I didn't even know you did a German accent until I saw that. I was like, wow. That was awesome.
I try to tell young, I appreciate you saying that and noticing that, but I'm trying to tell young artists that there's a way to do dialects and not sound like you're, oh, trying ever so much to be so very British. It's trying too hard, you know?
Yeah.
Look like being, it looks like forcing or acting or trying. And so.
Well, they over-enunciate.
Music first. That's why a bird can learn a dialect first, because it's music first.
Mm.
Then it's intent section second. And then the third one is just the actual meaning of each individual syllable in the words. But the dog knows when they're going to the vet. He doesn't know the whole detail. He knows when the vets come up, though, you know? He can hear it. He knows that one thing. And so it's hearing it like a song first. Load it in iTunes, because if you're in the shower and you're singing like that artist you like, you sing exactly like them. You do an impression of with their dialect in the song.
Yep.
You're memorizing it and playing it back. And it's the only time we do that as adults, because the memorizer that can completely shift us around is dead by that point, except in iTunes. And when you load it into the music section of your head, it still loads like a kid. The rest of the kid's gone.
Hear it like music. So does it help you to play music in the background while you hear the dialect?
It is the music background. That's the point. It's not about doing any other music. It's about using that file in your head to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing I noticed when I was starting to do the Irish accent, and actually when I was speaking German, I studied German in high school. And
Ich auch.
Yeah, ich
studiere ja Deutsch auf Universität studiert, aber ich vergiss zu viel.
Ja. Ich studiere vier Jahre. Yeah. Ich studiere für 3 Jahre in Schule.
Jahre.
Yeah. But the one thing I picked up, because I had German friends and they were like, you've got a really good accent. And it wasn't because of my accent. It was because I wasn't trying to enunciate. I was just trying to talk. You know what I mean? When people try to over enunciate, right? And that's where they make them. Yeah. Yeah. Because then they can tell, you know,
like from the UK are fighting for American English.
Yeah.
You can always tell when they're fighting for certain sounds. It just sounds like they're taking a while they're doing it. It just hurts them.
So how many accents do you do, by the way?
Oh, I don't. You know.
You do a lot.
There's a number. Well, I tell you, you know, not lately. The most I've gotten to work was mostly, you know, someone from the UK at some point, somewhere around there. Though that sort of dried up as a sort of a not very appropriate thing to do when there's so many UK actors over here.
Right. Well, the way I look at it is they probably get a lot of the jobs here because when they're in the casting office, they talk in that really attractive accent. And they woo the cast.
I used to do a bit myself. Yeah, oh, you like that, my love? You like that when we talk like this, my dear? Yeah, do you find that sexy? Yeah. Do you know where this dialect does not work? Where?
Exactly.
Yeah. Sexy over there.
Over there, we're sexy for some crazy reason.
That's although right.
Come here, Missy. Hey, how you doing there? You're a pretty hot little number.
And you know who's awesome. Cleaning up over there? Rich Hall. Rich
is
Hall
he?
Is kings over there. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You know what's funny? Most Americans don't even.
Lady Star.
Wow. See, I should have moved out there.
I think about that myself sometimes, man. I wonder what my life would look like had I made the great jump over there. Great,
right?
Rather gamble, but you know. But,
I mean, look at the way I look at it is we're in entertainment. Our whole life is a gamble, you know. Like, people are worried about their midlife crisis. Our whole life is a midlife crisis.
Right.
It really is.
That's right. Well, gee, I hope this is my midlife. That'd be nice.
Right? Now, let's talk about this.
I'll take it.
Yep. There you go. I'm excited to talk about this next thing because I've always wanted to do it, and I haven't done it yet because I love improv. I love it. That's why I do the show, because I'm, you know, when I'm talking to people, I like riffing, improvising stand up.
Yeah.
Let's right. tell us about this.
Troy, the genius, now noted photographer as well, Troy Conrad, came up with this game called Setlist. And he's like a Renaissance man. And he went to the other Renaissance man, Paul Provenza, who then produced it and turned it into this whole series of shows. And it's a fun game where you're on stage, cold audience out there looking right at you. Your mic is here. The wall is there, and there's a projection screen behind you. And on that screen, they start to put up suggestions for things you've never heard of. And you spin around and go cold right into a bit and just start talking like it's always been in your act. And it's called Setlist. And the real fun part of the game is when you try to string all the thoughts together at the end. That does not always happen, but it's really fun when it does. And so
I love it.
I just shot a special, a 1-hour special using Setlist. But I know.
Well, we got a clip. We got a clip. Yeah, we got a clip. I want to show people what it's like. So we got this clip that you did. How long ago was it?
That was a few years ago. That was okay. At Best, and that's probably maybe 8 years ago, something like that.
Okay, I remember you talking. We were at the improv, and we were talking about this. So I'm really excited to show this to people. Let's run this one, Suzanne.
Hey, you know, thank you very much, guys. It's very, you know, and it's interesting that you were talking about these conspiracies, because I just found out that not only was the moon landing fake, but my own landing at Oakland today was fake. I'm still in Burbank right now, sitting in a fucking warehouse. This is IMAX, and you're not fucking fooling me, okay? And I know this is true because... because I don't think with my brain. I am a optimist. If I start using my brain, I'll get so fucking depressed I'll blow my own brains out. I have to be thinking with my penis to get through this stardom shit we call life. And I let my penis pick out all the important stocks for me on the market. Why, you're a penis. Love's got to go somewhere. It's really important to take good care of yourself and to really distribute things around, because you got to be fair. You got to be fair, otherwise, anyone else want to negotiate the battle between my brain and my penis? I know they're going to be holding elections soon, and they're going to be doing smear campaigns against each other, and we should be dictating, no pun intended, for years of my life. And so, you know, the first ad comes out, and it's, sure, the penis looks like it's a lot of fun. Do you want your penis defending you in court? Vote brain. It's on top for a reason.
That's so much fun. I love it. I love it.
It got fun, huh?
Oh, my God.
So it's a really exciting.
You may not remember.
No net game, you know?
Yeah. So when is your special? Is it out yet or is it coming out? It's coming out.
No, it just got into the machinery and it's going to come out. We're hoping before the spring, but by the spring. Through Comedy Dynamics.
Rick Comedy Dynamics.
Set list comedy special.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And we're going to put any links you want to give us. We want our fans to be able to find it. So we'll put it in the we're going to upload this to YouTube after the broadcast and we'll put it all in there. Now, I remember the day I met you. I'm sure you don't. But it was at the Laugh Factory. And I was talking to John Lovitz. And it was funny because I was talking to him. I had met John a couple times in New York. And he was nice enough. He's always nice to me. You know what's funny? He like never remembers me. He's met me like six times. But he's a great guy every time. He tried to hook me up with one of my scripts at one point. But I was talking to him outside the Laugh Factory and you happened to come up and I was just like, I was starstruck because I had seen you in so many different things and I was just blessed to have met you and I'm grateful that I can call you my friend now. And you've done my shows in LA and I you're just a wonderful human being. And I'm grateful you came on my show today.
Well, it's mutual. Thanks, Danny.
I appreciate you. You're just a wonderful man. And I can't wait to hopefully do more work with you in the future.
I look forward to that too.
Okay, buddy. All right. Thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate it. All right. Okay. Let's bring Kevin back on. We got one more thing for you guys. Kevin, is this a great show or what?
Yeah, you get rid of me and suddenly it's a great show. I see what you're getting at, Danny.
No, you know what? You want to? Oh, look at you! You want to have that attitude? Okay, all right, no problem. I think it's time for Ask Anthony.
Oh, hey.
What are the greatest Christmas movies we have never seen?
Hello.
All right. Anthony, how you doing, buddy?
Feeling festive, sir.
Well, I am so excited. I can see that. Wow, look at that. You got the Santa hat. That's awesome. All right. So for those of you who don't know, Anthony has been an animator on South Park for 17 years, and he's created this amazing video library. It's not well, it's a you wanna why don't you explain?
Explained.
That is an incredible video store. It's like old school video store. So since it's the holidays, mm-hmm. since we wanted to come to you, and because I know everybody's seen these same Christmas movies year after year after year after year.
Sure.
Why don't you show us some stuff we haven't seen? I mean, I know you got the real stuff, but this is you. This is all you. Let's see.
Well, I hate to be that guy, but there are the staples. So I have my staple stack, you know.
Yep.
Die Hard. Have those. Okay.
Yes.
It's a given. This should be every year on rotation. Okay.
I argue about Die Hard every year. It's always women who say it's not a Christmas movie. It's a Christmas movie.
I've actually heard on the contrary. So hopefully that, you know, makes you feel a little better. But yes, it is a Christmas movie, 100%. It's a Christmas action movie. The end.
Yes. Yes. Right? One of the greatest of all time. It broke all the molds.
It did. And it's funny. Gremlins came out in summertime, but it's a total Christmas movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what's his, wait, what's his, what Joe, what's his name? The director?
Joe Dante.
Joe Dante. Mm-hmm. I might approach him for my movie.
He's a very nice guy. So you'd be approaching a very nice guy. So that's
yeah. Great. I've heard good things.
In terms of movies that not a lot of people have seen. I mean, there's definitely a fan base. I would have to say, start with Silent Night, Deadly Night. Okay.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect.
You got to lean to the side so we can see you.
Exactly. Silent Night, Deadly Night is basically about a little kid who witnesses his dad get killed and his mom sexually assaulted, then killed. And then he gets thrown into a Catholic orphanage and he has an abusive mother superior. He knocks out the Santa who comes that year. And then when he's 18 years old, he becomes a worker at a hardware store. They make him wear the Santa suit and he goes berserk, murders everyone, the end.
Was this based on your life, Kevin?
Yeah, that's Silent Night, Deadly Night, Tuesday Night.
Yeah. So that's a good one. That's a fun one for all the boys and girls out there.
Absolutely.
Kids another one that a lot of people haven't seen. Here we go. Shoot it up, everybody. What do we got? What do we got? Perfect. Now, this one's a special one. It's actually starring Brandon Maggart, who is Fiona Apple's dad. Okay.
Really?
Yes. This is also hailed from John Waters as the greatest Christmas film ever made.
What? Okay.
It's got a lot of different titles. It's known as Terror in Toyland. It's known as Better Watch Out. It's known as Christmas Evil, mostly. And it's really just about a guy obsessed with Santa Claus because he saw his mom make out with Santa Claus when he was a little kid. But Santa Claus was his dad. You know right. how it goes. So he becomes very obsessive and he assumes the role as Saint Nick himself, but a little too close. And he goes on a little spree and it's very psychological, very well played. I don't think it's going to be the most accepted movie if anybody watches it from this review, but it's got a special place in my heart. There's something very dark about it, and I think Brandon Maggart's just a phenomenal actor. He was also the dad in Jennifer Slept Here, which was the Ann Gillian show from like '83. Had one season. I don't know if anybody remembers that one.
No idea.
Killer show, but so that's a great one.
Okay.
What else do we have, Susanna? Perfect, perfect. Jack Frost is awesome.
Wasn't Michael Keaton in this one, or he was in one of them?
Well, yeah, that was also the same title. He was a snowboarding dad. There's no snowboarding in here, and there's a lot of murder.
Yeah, yeah.
It's basically a serial killer who gets mutated into a snowman and murders a small snowy town. The end.
So it's like Snowman Chucky.
Yes, precisely, precisely. And then, of course, the sequel.
Nice.
Yeah, so Sheriff Sam of the original movie, he needs a break from the mayhem that happened on the snowy mountain town, and he goes to the Caribbean. But, of course, mayhem follows him. The end.
Wait a minute. How the hell does a snowman come to the Caribbean and not melt?
They ice the island.
They ice the
island? Yeah, it's like an ecosystem, dude. It's like a total preserved, like, snow globe. It's great.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What else do we have, Susanna? There you go. That's a lenticular. In fact, you can. It's like a little hologram thing. That's what makes it fun. That's actually check it out. It's one of these. Yeah. See.
Ah.
Nice.
And now, of course, wait, is that cool? Well, that's actually what it does. Yeah, it's like they need to jump out on the marketing. So like, if you're gonna put it next to Mickey's Christmas Carol, you gotta like, hey, you know, like really jump out.
When you tilt it just right, it looks kind of like Kevin's ex.
Ah, yeah, I remember. She was very nice.
Similar body count.
Yeah.
Don't worry, so, she's not going to watch this. What's this?
That's a fun one from, I believe, the producers of Friday the 13th. Basically, there's a serial killer going around killing Santa Clauses. It's a little rough. But it's always a Christmas staple for me, so I always throw it in. So if you're looking for something a little dark, that's the one.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all happy movies.
Yes. Oh, okay, completely. Well, once I get through my happy staple. Okay, so this is a shit-tastic made-for-TV movie from 1986. At least it's starring some good actors. You got Pat Morita, God bless. You got Drew Barrymore, as you can see. Keanu Reeves and the chick from Stepfather. Her name is Jill something. I'll just leave it at that.
Wow.
But everyone's very good, but the movie is really terrible. So it's kind of something you throw on in the background to make you feel better about your life.
That's like a movie you when everybody when you have one of those bad sweater parties, and you put on a bad movie at the same time.
It's a just very good analogy.
Just make the whole movie bad, the whole night bad.
Yep. Now this one, okay. So you can go to YouTube right now and see the Mystery Science Theater 3000 riff on this one. For any filmmaker out there, if you ever wanted to like feel better about your sensibilities, watch this movie. It's also known as Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Yeah, it's really horror and terrible, but there's some kind of charm to it. I don't know what it is exactly, but it's definitely background noise. So if you're like folding laundry or like cleaning the grout of your kitchen, this is the movie. Yeah,
that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Even at one third of your focus, it still entertains.
Yeah. Because I just feel better about cleaning that grout. Like, yeah, not as bad as that.
Yeah, exactly. It's, at least that movie's worse than what I'm doing.
Correct. Very correct. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I've got a few more, actually.
Yeah, let's see them. Let's see them. Come on.
There's a good anthology. It's a horror anthology called Tales from the Crypt from 1972. And there's a one with Joan Collins called And All Through the House, where a psycho Santa. In fact, you might be able to see it. Psycho Santa stalks her.
Joan Collins. Oh, my God.
It's a goodie. It's a goodie. So
she was hot when she was young.
Horny Santa.
You ageist. No. there's a couple staples that I'm going to throw in that I haven't seen in a while. Good old Fred Astaire.
Oh, yeah.
And I picked this one up. I've never seen it, but who doesn't love John Denver?
Oh, yeah.
I figured I'd throw that on in the background when I organized tapes.
I liked him in Oh God.
That was great, yeah.
He was great in that.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And then I found a couple of these that I haven't seen since I was a kid. Some claymation from yesteryear.
Oh, my God. The old claymation, dude.
And then just to keep it going a little further, boom, boom, boom.
What's that? Wait, Pinocchio's Christmas?
Pinocchio's Christmas.
I have never heard of that.
I got to round it out. I got to round it out. Another Christmas movie. Now, you can argue it's not a Christmas film, but there's a lot of snow in it and a lot of heart. Cannibal the Musical, okay? Whoever's not seen this, if you want to see a kick-ass movie with a lot of heart and great photography and killer acting and just like people who are hungry to make something good, that's the movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Ding it, yay!
Yep. Every year, hands down, boom. Home Alone, sorry, move over, Cannibal.
Home Alone 2 was better than Home Alone 1. I'm going to say.
I actually disagree.
Really?
I like Home Alone 2, and they really murder them at the end. But I think Home Alone 2 for me has moments where Home Alone is a quieter movie.
Yeah.
Very, very timeless because you're stuck in a house with timeless Christmas colors, red and green throughout.
I just love that there was more comedy.
New York. That's what it is.
Exactly. It was New York, and there was more comedy in it than the first one, I think. I just felt like there was just more fun. I laughed harder. And you know why I know that? Because I watched it with my son.
Right on.
We watched Home Alone 2 first by mistake, and then we went to watch Home Alone. We thought it was going to be better, and it was like, it wasn't as good, Dad.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong if that's your opinion. I mean, you know.
I mean, that's just comedy-wise. If you're talking about the heart and soul, the first one was better, obviously.
It's kind of like that the whole picture's on Kevin McAllister's shoulders. Like, he's really, like, it's up to him to make it happen. And he does a great fucking job.
Yeah.
And in the sequel, he's got a lot of supporting characters that he's playing off of.
Right.
A lot of material in part two.
Yeah.
But I think the first one is just, it's kind of that magic in the bottle. It's a little... Maybe I was the right age for it at the time, but I remembered Macaulay Culkin from Uncle Buck in '89. And I was like, oh man, that's the kid to watch.
Yeah. So
I was really excited when he came out with that movie in, I think, '90.
Well, I'm friends with the big brother Buzz, Devin Retrieve.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah. We did some funny videos together, me and him.
Awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I would say that pretty much rounds out my movie Christmas list, you know?
I think you've given a lot of people a lot to think about.
Thank you, sir.
A lot of people neglect the serial killer Christmas genre, and I do. I think you've given them a roadmap.
Thank you. Of course. Hopefully you like follow in their life, but yes, it's good to branch out of the normal Christmas story type films. No disrespect to Christmas Story. I think it's fantastic. So
now tell people how they can find you because, you know.
You can find me on Instagram at Mondo_video.
All right.
Awesome. I like the video store quite a bit.
And you are a regular part of our show now. So thank you for joining us. And
thank you for
helping us out this episode.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, inch by inch, I'm gunning for Kevin's job. So, yeah.
You know, I know you were behind me being booted from the studio for half the show. You don't fool me.
Curses. You're on to me.
Kevin's on thin ice. He's on thin ice.
And I'm a fat guy, too. That ice doesn't stand a chance.
Good to see you all.
Guys, thank you so much.
Happy holidays.
Everybody watching, thank you so much for joining the show. Merry Christmas. Have a great holiday. And we will see you on the 30th for our next show.
Well, the year-end spectacular. Do not miss it.
We've got, who do we have? We have John Reynolds, who was a writer for the Ferguson Show for 7 years. He also was a head writer for the Sherman and Peabody cartoon, the new one. And then we've got Brian Scalera, one of my good friends. He was a regular on Stacked. He was actually a main character on Stacked with Pamela Anderson. He's been on everything, Dexter, everything. Guys, please tune in. Thank you guys so much and have a great one.
Good night.
Woo!
Nope. The